It's the Popmatic Podcast for September 7th, 2016.
I'm assuming you love to write fantasy fiction, except the character names in your stories are suffering. Need thou not be afraid? We can add Onius, Inus, or Anus to just about anything and it becomes magical.
Coming to you from Flea Bottom in the heart of King's Landing, it's the Popmatic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Jeremy, first of his name, and joining me today are...
Princess Amanda.
Muggle Sarah.
Hodor.
Excellent. So, Game of Thrones is one of the most popular television shows in the world, but somehow we have never really talked about it, probably because Evil Robot hates it.
I'm not a big fan either.
So well, there
either.
You go.
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you Sorry. Go. We're fit. We're like
lukewarm.
60-40 in here.
For our listeners who don't have neck beards, let me give you a little bit of an explanation about why we're talking about Game of Thrones this week. They worship a seven-faced god in the land of Westeros, where Game of Thrones primarily takes place. And they worship this seven-faced god in churches called septs. And this is September 7th. So September used to be the seventh month of the year back in olden times. Now it's the ninth month of the year, so it is improperly named. I guess that means November and October are also improperly named. Everything's screwed up. Anyway, there's also a new Harry Potter book, so check that out too.
So today we're going to cast a level 5 conjuring spell to summon some of our favorites from the realm of fantasy.
Ooh.
And to roll for initiative.
Sarah? Damn, that's good.
Yeah.
Sarah, you go into a room. What do you read?
I want to leave the room.
You can't leave the room.
Best thing, let's go.
There's a bunch of kobolds and halflings on the other side of the door. They hit you with a +1 mace.
Very nice. You can't talk about fantasy without talking about the king of juvenile fantasy himself, Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Harry Potter.
Harry Trotter.
J.K. Rowling simply cannot keep Harry quiet these days, but you don't hear me complaining, nor any other Potter geeks. There are many other great juvenile and YA series out there that kids, and let's be honest, adults too, drool over. But I arguably think it was Harry and his magic-packed, prodigious world of adventure, mischief, and danger that enticed children and adults to begin reading again with a vengeance, sometimes doing it together. But I digress. The big news of the Potter world is that Rowling wrote an 8th and final book/play, along with a little help from a playwright and director, and it premiered on London's West End July of this year. Rowling has said it's the final book of the Potter saga. I hope for Potter lovers' sake that's not true. But
I don't believe it.
Yeah, I don't think so either. She can't.
No, she's like Cher. She'll never retire.
Yeah.
She believes in life up above.
Her site is called Pottermore.
True. Oh. And she has attempted other books. I haven't read any of her.
I like her mystery series.
Okay. I might try that. Casual Vacancy.
That was horrible. Don't read that. Run away.
Yeah, for bad things.
No, it was horrible.
But, yeah. Yep. Okay.
But those ones are good. Yeah. Cormac Strike. Is that
Yeah, Cormoran Strike.
Cormoran Strike. Yeah. That's, yeah.
Interesting.
Those are good.
Robert Galbraith.
Anyway, it's definitely a great ending, or it will be, I hear. Full disclosure, I'm still reading it. That is the new book, Harry Potter and the Cursed Child. I'm almost done. Almost done. I promise. What I can tell you, though, is that it's an easy read, like brain candy, especially as a play. I've only ever read one other play before by Tennessee Williams, and I loved it. It makes it easier, for me at least, to mentally picture the scene and who's talking. That's not always that clear in some books, and you have to reread paragraphs to fully understand what's happening. But the focus of this story is not Harry himself this time, but instead his son, Albus. It's taking place 19 years after the Battle of Hogwarts when Harry defeated who shall not be named, during a time when life is a little more domestic for Mr. Potter. The opening scene of the play is the very last scene from the last movie, when Harry and Ginny and the rest of the aged Hogwarts alumni take their children to Platform 9 3/4 for their momentous journey to becoming wizards and witches. But life isn't as easy for Albus as it was for the boy who lived, and he blames his father for that. Daddy issues. I don't want to reveal too much of the story, but I can say that Albus becomes good friends with a Malfoy, which is already a distinction from his father. There was also one other curious thing that I noticed. If the rest of you Potter freaks remember, at the ending of the last book, Harry and Ginny take in Teddy. I don't want to reveal an important part of that series for our listeners who haven't read it, so all I can say is if you remember who Teddy is, he isn't in this play.
Yeah, I wondered where he went.
Yeah. Which leads me to wonder if this play might follow the movie or perhaps not the, and perhaps not the book series. I'll know that for sure at the end of the book, I hope, but till then, you should add yourself to the long holds list because this book is worth its hype.
Maybe you'll get lucky like me and find a Lucky Day copy.
Maybe.
Ooh. Is that Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them? Is that her?
Uh-huh.
Now, is that... She wrote a side book.
Okay. Yeah.
She's written, so this is kind of, so it's the same world,
yeah,
but
I was gonna say,
Harry's not in it.
But it's like in the in
like,
America,
it's like a prequel,
right?
Or something,
yeah,
right?
It's like the American Hogwarts.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And isn't it like 80 pages long and they're making 3 movies out of it?
It was, I thought so. Like I remember being, that, I haven't read it because I'm not going to read 85 books for money, but that's just why she wrote it. But it was just a companion piece. But I want, because it's not very big, like it's, unless she's written another one that's like she's expanded it,
but
it's just skinny. Mm.
Oh, I am looking forward to that movie. I think it comes out in
November. I mean, it looks like they did a good job. My question for you is that, because I've read it and I finished it, but do you, I don't think that if this would have been the first book in the Harry Potter series, the way they presented it, I don't know that it would have been as successful.
The cursed.
Well, I'm not saying not by the plot, just because of the way they presented it. Like if the first Harry Potter book would have been in play form, like I think we would have written it off and been like, this is stupid. What is?
Yeah,
like,
I agree.
Feel like it helped because you have this 7 book backstory, 14 movie, 20 year project.
Mm-hmm.
This is successful because it has that backstory.
Yeah, I do agree. Yeah,
When I was reading it, I was kind of like, I wouldn't care about this if I was not.
Mm-hmm.
Fully ensconced in Harry Potter land.
Yeah, I completely agree. Hmm. Yep.
But the other fun thing is that the play debuted on Harry Potter's 30th birthday.
Whoa.
It was July 31st. That's Harry's birthday. So, yeah, because he was 11 when he started, so it was 19 years later. So that was why they did July 30th. Because they did like ABC Family or Freeform or whatever it's called. And I had like the Harry Potter weekend to celebrate his birthday.
Mm-hmm.
It was that like that Saturday they played like all the movies. And then Sunday night was when the play debuted, and that's when the book came out. And so.
Wow, didn't
excellent
notice
marketing.
That. Yeah, definitely. I know they kind of combine, like, there's all these little coincidences between, like, the books and the movies, mm-hmm. like, when they premiered and all that fun stuff. Yeah, love it.
That's adorable.
Well, happy birthday.
Yep. On that note, Amanda,
yay! Okay, so someone is thinking about fall. So the temperatures outside may not reflect it, but fall means back to school time, the return of football, and the start of the new television season. So not only do we get new shows and our returning favorites, but we get all kinds of brand new shows that networks are banking all their ad dollars that everyone will absolutely love.
We won't.
None of them will be out at my house.
Spoiler alert.
Okay, so I kind of take this with a grain of salt because I've been burned a few too many times, see Firefly, on series that I've loved but were unceremoniously canceled after 2 or 3 meager episodes. So in 2011, I started seeing previews for this fairy tale show, and it looked like the characters would kind of flip back and forth between fairy tale time and modern world. And, you know, thanks to Disney, I've always loved fairy tales, and so I kind of wanted to watch this one, but I didn't. At the last minute, I chickened out. I couldn't do it because I didn't want to give my heart to another TV show and then have it disappear forever because I figured I liked it, so they would cancel it. but it turns out in this case, I shouldn't have been quite so circumspect because 5 years later, we are now looking forward to Once Upon a Time coming back with its 6th season debuting on ABC Sunday, September 25th. Now, I never really lost interest in the series. I've kind of been tracking it under the radar to kind of see what would happen before I jumped in. And when we started talking about doing a fantasy podcast, I knew that now was the time for me to finally, you know, pull the trigger on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So the basic premise is that the evil queen, played by Lana Parrilla, cast a horrible black curse over Fairyland, specifically on her stepdaughter Snow White, who is played by Jennifer Goodwin, at her wedding to Prince Charming. Now, all fairy tale characters are trapped in the modern-day town of Storybrooke, Maine. And so none of them remember that they're fairy tales.
They have a really good library and storybook.
I know. We loan that stuff all the time. We never get it back. So the writing on this show, I think, is really good, at least as far as I've seen through the first season. They do a really nice job of kind of balancing the current modern story with flashbacks to their former fairy tale lives. I also like Jennifer Morrison, who was formerly on the TV show House. Mm-hmm. And now she plays, yes, great cast. Now she plays Emma Swan, the alleged daughter of Snow White and Prince Charming, who is supposed to be able to defeat the evil queen and restore everyone's memories. Ta-da! Hello. So, for me, I think this is a great series to binge watch. I may have waited a little long because now I have 5 seasons to catch up on, so I've got some work to do. But luckily, the library has all 5 seasons on DVD, so I think I can handle it. Now, if 5 seasons of fantasy aren't enough for you, here's a fun fact that I recently learned. Snow White and Prince Charming, a.k.a. Jennifer Goodwin and the actor Josh Dallas, actually met and fell in love while filming Once Upon a Time.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got married in 2014 and now have 2 kids who will also take over the world and kill the evil queen.
Now they have a happily ever after.
That's right. And who says fairy tales aren't real?
Nice. I did the opposite. I watched it when it first came out, and I think I got to maybe season 3, and then I stopped
Then you gave up on it.
Yeah. Not to say it was bad. I just was kind of like, I'm done.
You do kind of get overwhelmed with stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So far, I'm only in season 1, so
it's a good show.
I love all the characters. Like, I love how they tie everybody in together. Mm-hmm. It's, like, good times.
Very
The only
creative.
Thing I know that Jennifer Goodwin was on was Judy Hopps and Zootopia.
Oh, yeah, she was. That was a funny movie.
That was a good movie.
She was on Big Love, too.
On Big Love, yeah.
She was wife number 3.
Yeah, she
was in Walk the Line. She was the mean first wife.
Interesting. Okay.
Well, I like her.
I like that Zootopia.
She's from Memphis.
I just thought it was kind of neat. I've only seen commercials for Once Upon a Time because I'm a dude, but like, I think it's kind of neat that they use the Disney version of fairy tale characters. So like the woman, I could have sworn that the woman from the redhead girl from Brave is like a character at some point.
I know the Frozen sisters show up. Yeah, and I think Hook comes in here fairly quickly.
And it's on ABC too, which is owned by
Disney.
Yeah.
So
Beauty's in there early on too, which is my favorite.
It's a pretty clever. Little,
it is
like both as a storytelling trick and as a way of like
marketing device.
You know how you spend all day with your kids and these things? Come on tonight.
Yeah, didn't they make a big deal about the premiere of like Mulan or something that's gonna come in? Or something?
Mm-hmm. Oh, I don't know.
Anyway,
I'm not that far yet.
Again, you know, I only see it during commercials during Match Game. I changed the blank when that comes on, but
all right, so, Mike, what you got?
Oh, underwear,
right.
What?
I said melon. personally, I usually dig more of the sword and sorcery style fantasy. You're Conan the Barbarian, you're Pfefferd and the Great Mauser, you're Black Company, because I like to read, gang.
however, reading is dumb.
Reading is not fundamental.
Class act. Get in play.
I was trying to
Tiny Lister.
However, about 10 years ago, I went gaga for the Dresden Files and discovered urban fantasy, which grew more and more in my esteem until it became all I read for about a year or two. But after a while, I kind of got sick of reading stuff like, you know, trench-coated weirdos investigating weird chupacabra attacks in Kansas City while fending off the attention of their vampire lovers and navigating the convoluted politics of the Sasquatch Parliament. Don't blame me.
With a dinosaur.
Don't blame me. I voted for Bigfoot. two urban fantasy series that survived my growing boredom for the genre, one of which was the Sandman Slim series, which longtime listeners remember I recommended on I Tickle My Fantasy segment during the episode. And
I remember that episode.
Yeah, there was a lot of conversations about...
The most fantasy-based thing that you've talked about right so far has been the longtime listeners...
Oh! Always so mean to our fans.
We have 3.
Well, we will get a deluge of mail.
We're going to hear from Gary from Perth again.
That's right.
He stopped listening a while ago.
He just plays his didgeridoo whenever Jeremy comes on. the other series was the Nightside series by Simon R. Green. The Nightside is an area of London where it is always 3 a.m. and, quote, a place where dreams come true and nightmares come alive, where anyone could buy anything, often at the price of your soul or someone else's, where the music never stops and the fun never ends, unquote. The main character is a private investigator named John Taylor, who has the special power to see where people are or what their greatest weakness is, and he likes to call it his special eye, his third eye, his private eye.
Oh, no.
Nice. I'm slapping my knee as we speak. Yep.
For 12 books, anytime he whipped out his private eye, little Max is going, he has a bunch of friends who help him out in cases like his heavily armed hit person girlfriend, Susie Shooter, or Razor Eddie, the punk god of the straight razor. Whoa. Nightside is run by the authorities, capital A, a series of godlike beings and power brokers who usually make their wishes known through their middleman named Henry Walker. He uses his magical voice to compel people to do things.
Is voice capitalized too?
Yes.
Yes!
Very good.
Of course it is!
You get a brownie point.
Hashtag trope.
I must confess, the series is a bit of a guilty pleasure because it feels very, I guess, light, you know? I
mean, Don't feel guilty, Mike.
Every single book, the all-powerful villain sounds super scary until John defeats him slash her in like 30 seconds using his private eye powers, you know? It's like, oh no, I'm about to die. Oh no. Oh wait, he's got this one string holding up his costume. Oh wait, now he's dead. Oh.
So it's Scooby-Doo.
Like, every single time, it's like...
You know, I would have gotten away with it.
If
it wasn't for you common nouns that I've capitalized.
Your hatred of fantasy. These people. Just did downer.
I love stuff like that.
At least once a page, Gray describes something bizarre like a taxi that eats passengers and waves it away with some variation on anything can happen in the night side. In fact, I was thinking of making an unusual events occur, .. in the night side drinking game, but I'd be pickled in about 50 pages. the first book in the series, which we have, is called Something from the Night Side, where John Taylor investigates a spooky house. Although I think it picks more in the second book called Agents of Light and Darkness, where he has to find the unholy grail, the cup from which Judas drank at the Last Supper.
Whoa.
Awesome.
Flip the script.
Yeah. Whoa. Some angels are trying to find it to prevent demons from invading. It's
I like
awesome.
That. That's good. You must choose, but choose poorly.
What do you have, Jeremy?
That's a cup of a Judas.
I've read Simon Green, too. I haven't read that particular series. I've read some of his short stories. I like his writing.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Yeah, very creative.
I enjoy it.
I've never thought, I'm not being like a big drinker or whatever, I've never thought about a reading drinking game, but like sure. Usually like read alone. So, like, you're just drinking alone. Every time there's a chapter break.
We've established I have a sad, lonely life. Yeah.
Every time there's a chapter break, I'm going to take a drink a full beer. I'm going to read this Dan Brown book.
Oh, yeah, you know, I'm thinking about drinking a Dan Brown book.
Sorry.
Might as well get drinking to get through it.
So you said I hate fantasy. I think there was a time in my life when I would have said that I hated fantasy. I had this, like... At a time when I was like, all I thought about was comic books.
You mean now?
Yes.
Yesterday.
Somehow I was like, spaceships are dumb. Swords and sorcery are dumb. And I don't know why, what that was. Like, I think because my friend, maybe he just was dumb. He had a poster on his wall that said chivalry.
I go through, moods, you know, like there's the urban fantasy mood year, but lately I've been more of a science fiction-y mood, and fantasy bores me, but I think, you know, it'll go back.
I think I really wanted to be cool, and like I was closeted or something like that. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't like fully explored that.
I reminded her when I was younger and was like, Metallica's for lame nerds, idiots with no brain cells, and I started listening to Metallica, and I was like, this is amazing, ooh, yeah.
Ooh. It's possible to like it and be right at the same time, too. That's all getting cut out. My explorations of the fantasy genre have been somewhat limited because of my previous prejudices. But in recent years, I've kind of tried to dip my toes in there. But so I've read all the Game of Thrones books. I listened to most of them, and I read the first one, except for that Night of Seven Kingdoms. I've also watched all the show. But really, that if I think about it, like I can't think of anything else. I was never like a Tolkien person. I think swords are kind of a lame weapon unless they're on fire or late.
You don't like swords? Swords are my favorite
weapon. My husband just punched you in the face.
If swords don't...
Yeah, that or a war
lightsabers are cool. Lightsabers are cool.
But they can't happen. Make a lightsaber.
Nope. We're not going there.
So despite only thinking swords are cool, conditionally cool. How about that? Because I do think they're conditionally.
We'll
I enjoy some Conan sword play, but I just want them to be on fire or something or shoot things.
Flaming swords are cool.
Yes, exactly.
They're wielded by angels.
See, look, we can meet halfway. Still, somehow, I wanted to read this book called The Autumn Lands, Tooth and Claw by Kurt Busiek and Benjamin Dewey. It's a comic book. The first thing that appealed to me with it was magic, because I actually do kind of like magic stuff. This book takes place in a world where magic sort of provides the foundation of civilization, from medicine to commerce to cities which float in the sky thanks to powerful spells. But this is also a world where magic is failing, so they're sort of like, what do we do? It's like they're at peak magic, and they need to get off of foreign magic or whatever the corollary is.
They're going to need to drill in yieldy Saudi Arabia.
Yes. Spell, baby, spell. Yeah. So I just came up with that on the fly.
Nice.
Thanks.
Congrats.
Yeah, thank you. So to keep the magic flowing, a group of wizards gather together their powers to call forth a great champion, capitalized, from another time, who originally gave them magic, but now they want to go back in time and pull him before he gave them magic, so he can give them magic again. Does that make any sense?
You lost me 10 magics ago.
Paradox. Yeah. So anyway, they want to call forth this great champion from the nether world to help restore magic to its full power. And they managed to do this with some unexpected and disastrous consequences. So the second thing that appealed to me about this book was that all the wizards and all the people are animals. So the main character, his name is Dunstan Dorlinson, is a dog. The main villain is a scar-faced bison named Seven Scars, and the wizard responsible for summoning the great champion, Garta of the Dair, is a warthog. So apparently I have a soft spot for anthropomorphic animals.
This is very, like, European. They seem to never gave up the, like, you know, animals doing serious things phase.
See, I actually kind of hate animals in real life. So I don't like – I just don't
and
like
you
them.
You hate swords and you hate animals.
I don't like a lot of stuff. I don't like a lot of smells and soda pop maybe.
Anyway, go on.
Everyone –
I feel better about hating tomatoes now because –
Yeah.
You know. Hey, man.
Like, pales in comparison.
Yeah. I just don't. I mean, I have no. I don't want to. I wish no harm to animals. I just don't want an animal in my house. I have an animal in my house.
That poor cat.
It's not my choice. He gets love. Yeah.
I try to pet him, and he just freaks out because he, you know, has to hang out with grumpy pants.
Yeah. So we just don't talk. So in this, there are all these people in robes and stuff. There are owls and lizards. There's a giraffe, a bison, pigs, a walrus. But there's also a certain hairless ape who also plays a pivotal role. Maybe you can guess who that is. He's got a capitalized name. So each chapter in the book sort of opens with a single page teaser of like, hey, we're doing this. And then when you turn the page, there's this beautiful two-page spread that sort of looks like it's from a pulp magazine from the 30s or something. And the art kind of has like it's not Frank Frazetta. It's the dude that drew the book, Benjamin Dewey. But it's still like there's like this like big battle scene or this big lush landscaper thing. And it gives the whole thing kind of this swashbuckling Saturday morning matinee feel that I really like, which swords are, I guess, a part of that often. So what's wrong with me? So these pages are also all attributed to different writers and artists in the text. Like it's like this. Here's the name of the story by whoever, and then illustrated by whatever. It's just the guys that wrote the book. These are made up names with like big fantasy weird names. So there's kind of the story within a story element that I also love. Like the characters in the book are telling us a story about events that already happened. I really like that. So hints of things to come in this series include a glimpse into the great champion's world, which is both tantalizing because it seems very technology and sci-fi driven. He's like got something in his arm, he presses a button and light comes up, and he can like press his forehead and these like lenses come over his eyes and stuff, so he can survey the landscape. This is also frustrating though, because you don't get any more of that. You just get kind of a little taste of it in volume one of the series. Volume two is coming out at the beginning of next year, though, so be on the lookout for that. I enjoyed this, but I think what I didn't enjoy was that it reminded me that I have this big hole where, like, I want to read all these anthropomorphic animal books, like Watership Down or Mrs. Frisbee and the Rats of Nim, or The Wind in the Willows, or this book that we used to have but we no longer have called Lives of the Monster Dogs. So if animals are walking and talking, you can sign me up. Thank you.
Hey, guys. Hey, Jeremy. What do we do on Tickle My Fancy?
Well, maybe the library has it. Maybe the library doesn't. But either way, it's tickling our fancy.
Amanda?
I like to go first. So for my fancy tickle this week, I'm going to stick with fairy tales. So
I like that you keep doing that.
Yeah, by the way,
it's
really neat.
It's a theme.
Good job.
I'm easily suggestible. So some of us on this podcast spend a decent amount of time talking about graphic novels. But it seems lately that I have jumped on this bandwagon. Oh. Like, I'm in, baby.
Fished in.
That's right.
So a while ago, someone, I can't remember who, maybe Evil Robot, suggested to me that I should read the Fables series.
Oh, snap. You're doubling up the tie-ins.
I am. So I was going to talk about Fables first, but I liked Once Upon a Time better. So
there you go.
So Fables is written by Bill Willingham, and the storyline is oddly close to that of the TV show I just talked about. So now
he's
our...
He's not mad at all.
It's a grim approximation.
He did start first, too.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Jesus.
So now our fairy tale lands have been overrun by a big bad guy called the Adversary, also capitalized.
Yes!
I'm just hitting on all cylinders right here.
That is both, like, extremely annoying to me.
I love it every time.
But also, I love it completely. Like, I don't, does that qualify as a trope? Is that?
That's I'm not, sure it is.
I mean, it's maybe a just an element.
It's where you can link to like TV tropes. And
yeah.
Future correction.
Sorry. Correction. Yeah.
So all the fairy tale creatures have managed to escape, and they now live in Fable Town, New York, because apparently all displaced former fairy tale characters moved to New England.
It's the most magical part of the country.
It is.
It's the oldest settled part of the United States. Yes. North America.
Yeah. So.
North America was settled before Europeans ever arrived here.
So the human fairy tale characters and those that can pass as human live a little bit more publicly in the city. Those that can't pass are relegated to the farm, also capitalized in upstate New York.
Yeah.
So they don't reveal their existence to the rest of the world and blow our minds and have our brains run out our ears. So there is a constant running theme that the characters are trying to take back their lands from the adversary. I'm only a few issues in, but once again, the main story is focused on Snow White. She, along with figurehead Old King Cole, are running Fable Town. I will admit, I don't like the comics quite as much as the TV show. They're a bit more abrupt. Plus, you can kind of tell it's more written by a guy as opposed to a girl, because Snow White did get to marry Prince Charming, but then somehow he slept with her sister, Rose Red, so she divorced him. Yeah, and then Beauty and the Beast are in marriage counseling because he keeps turning beastie on her, which endangers his ability to pass as human, and she doesn't want to go live at the farm. So it's a little bit...
Drama.
Less happily ever after than...
Where's Maury Povich?
Yeah, really. I mean, we need... Yeah.
Jimmy this Joe. Wolf is the father.
The 14 of your children.
14 pups, yeah.
So Fables started in 2003. The first issue was called Legends in Exile. It finished up last summer, so once again, it looks like I waited just long enough to start, and so I won't have to deal with any cliffhangers. I can go right from one episode to the other. There are also two spin-off series I found called Jack of Fables and Ferris, which are both written still by Willingham. I haven't read these yet, but depending on how the rest of the original books go, I'll probably check out these once I have finished. The library has all of the Fables books. And most of the spin-offs as far as I've seen. So much like Grimm's Fairy Tales, these books are not for children. There is nudity and violence and sex, so if you're looking for that, party on. but if you like your fairy tales with a twist, check these out.
There's also a series that features Cinderella, who in this series is a spy. Secret agent type.
I was wondering if that was Ferris or not, but
Ferris is another one that just features like all like princesses.
Yeah, that's the other one I saw. Yeah,
it might just be called Cinderella or something.
It's got some like pun on like you know the spy who loved me or something.
Yeah.
That's why I looked at it. I was like, oh, tell me more.
The shoe that fit me.
Yeah.
You lost me at Cinderella, but you had me at spy.
That would be Cinderella from Fable Town with Love, and Cinderella, Fables Are Forever by Chris Robinson, who is also the author of iZombie, which we have talked about on the podcast before.
We have a patron that always gets comics, and we talk about comics a lot, and he's like, he always talks about that, and people have recommended it to me, but I haven't.
There's something that really bugs me about it, but I can't talk about it with Amanda because I don't want to like spoil it.
Yeah, no, la, la, la.
La, la, la.
You and Mike, and are you and Jeremy going to have a conversation off
mic? That's right.
Nice.
Sarah?
Yes. Okay. Well, tickling my fancy this week is not going to be fantasy. I'm sorry to disappoint.
It's okay.
Tickling my fantasy.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. I knew that was in there somewhere.
That's good.
With the new Harry Potter book slash play not included, I've been spending a lot of my reading time these days with books that are somewhat modern classics. I use the term modern with my own definition here. I mean novels released within the last 10 years or so and were popular upon release. These are books that I sadly never got around to reading. The Robert Langdon series is on my soon-to-read list, I hope, and I just finished reading The Lovely Bones.
Mike is shaking his head.
Yeah, I know.
I like them.
I need a beer with it,
Do you need to
Ryan.
Go to sleep?
The other ones are good. The Da Vinci Code's a little bit.
Okay.
I like The Lovely Bones.
Long-time listeners may remember me. I'm a big fan of like Dante and the Divine Comedy and stuff. And so I was like, oh, I'll read Inferno.
That one was not as bad. Angels of
Maybe want to use one. The pages to give me paper cuts to open a vein. To
Ouch.
Yeah. Anywho, but
tell us how you really feel.
People are different. Maybe you enjoy.
I liked it. Bog Standard. Inferno was a little bit dicey, but I like.
Okay, I'll keep all of this in mind.
Bog Standard.
Nice. All right. Well, anyway, I just finished reading The Lovely Bones. Depressing, but still good. But one of my favorites that I've read so far this year is Brooklyn by Colm Tóibín. I know I didn't pronounce that right, but close enough. The movie adaptation came out last November and received a few Oscar nominations, but sadly it didn't receive the hype it deserved. It deserves, but perhaps a storyline that many of us can relate to at some point in our lives. Brooklyn's Tale is a period piece centering on the character Eilish Lacey.
Eilish,
yes. I know I pronounced that correctly. She happens.
It's not spelled that way, gang, just as a...
Eilish. Yeah, it took me a while. But she happens to be a young Irish girl that is sent to America, as they refer to it in the early 1950s. She's sent there almost reluctantly by her family to find a better life for herself. As you can imagine, she struggles at first thanks to homesickness, but eventually creates a home for herself in this new alien world. Part of that homesickness cure comes from meeting a young Italian boy named Tony. Tony shows her that she can be happy away from her family, and it becomes normal for her. But her past revisits her with an unfortunate occurrence, and she has to make a difficult decision about her future. I hope this book wasn't discussed before on this podcast, but if it was, consider this more praise. Being written from a man's perspective, this story was both emotional, but also anti-dramatic.
Kill all men!
If that's a word. It was simple in its writing, but also complex in the character development. And the movie might be the first that I can say I liked better than the book. And that's saying something because I really love the book. But if you want to know, just check it out from the library because it's an instant classic.
Did you do book first or movie first?
What did I do? I did the book first. Yeah.
Just because I was aware of the movie before. I haven't read either, but I saw the movie first. I was like, oh, okay. That was a book. And so I usually like to read the book first.
The book and the movie coincide pretty well. There's a few details they keep out. But overall, it was really good. Really well done. Yeah. Mike?
I watched the movie as well.
Yeah?
Moving on. Like it?
Not a genre.
Well, we established that I have an Oscar prostitute and...
Proscritute?
And that was the last I watched as my best picture retrospective and... I did have a lot of fun saying Eilish for about 2 weeks. I went to go see...
high praise indeed.
I went to go see like Dick Dale play or something, and like the whole time I'm in like this honky-talk, I'm just like, you know, this would go great. Who missed out, Eilish? In my head, I say it out loud because I'm only slightly crazy. I'm like a quarter or 16th Irish. I can do that. So Holy Mother Belcourt, hallowed be that name, has been having a Brian De Palma retrospective since airing the documentary on him early last month. And this week, I thought I'd recommend a movie I quite enjoyed from the series called Blowout. John Travolta, of all people, plays a Foley artist, or those are the people who put sound effects in movies, you know, like screams and creaks and what Jeremy's doing. He's sticking his hand in his mouth. Whilst recording some wind, that's not a lie, he witnesses a car plummet off a bridge. He quickly leaps into whatever the river is in Philadelphia, is too lazy to look it up.
The Schuylkill.
That's how you pronounce that?
It's like Schuylkill, right? Hey, you know how to say it, probably. You got all those words.
He's from Pittsburgh, and apparently they spit on people from Philly.
Yeah.
Really?
They got three rivers up in Pittsburgh.
Oh. Yeah.
Anyway, the Schuylkill River or whatever.
Schuylkill River.
And rescues the only survivor from the wreck, played by RoboCop's partner, Nancy Allen. Every time I see her in a movie, I'm just like, Murphy! you need to turn on Murphy. I'd buy that for a dollar. Well, this movie is from 1981. The whole movie feels so incredibly 70s, from the fashion to the hairstyles to the never-ending mistrust of the government and conspiracy being underfoot everywhere. Had a great time. Travolta achieved the impossible for me, and that his performance is so good, I forgot that I was looking at Vincent Vega.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah. Parentheses, I came of age in the 90s and not the 70s. No Barbarino for me, gang.
Up your nose with the rubber hose.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Saturday Night Fever reference. It was so good that I think the tickets should be discounted, because why should you pay for the whole seat when you only need the edge?
You were torn on that one.
Okay. Oh, man. I used to be a copywriter, and I never got to write stuff like that. First, because I wasn't that good, and second, because it was for a food company.
Dang.
Do you have anything to recommend, Jeremy?
I do. Tackling my fancy this week is OJ Made in America. It's nearly 8 hours long. Every second of it is riveting. This was a ESPN 30 for 30 documentary. All the ones that I've seen have been pretty good. This one maybe eclipses all of them because it's fantastic. It sort of begins by telling two different stories. The first about Orenthal James Simpson, the Juice, the 1968 Heisman Trophy winner, NFL star, TV pitchman Nordberg from the Naked Gun movies. And then it's paralleling that with the story of the LAPD's legacy of brutality against African Americans. And so these two stories are kind of going along as OJ goes through his career, as the police like batter people and pull them over for no reason or hurt them or whatever. And then
You get away with shooting an African-American in the head in a convenience store, and then you walk away from that.
Yeah. Well, that wasn't a cop. That was a Korean lady. But still. So really bad blood between in LA with the cops. But so those two stories are kind of going along, and then they dovetail with the murder of Simpson's estranged wife in June of 1994. And of course, we all know that was the trial of the century. And, it was the trial became maybe less about the murder of two people and more about, the cops and their legacy and stuff. So the movie, it's really interesting to view through the lens of today, given that, we've made so much progress, in the world. It's really a fascinating, movie and, I watched it over like three or four nights. It's almost 8 hours long, but really I would absolutely sit and watch this entire thing because I would just pay for part of a seat because I would just need the edge.
Oh, man.
Is this the one with Cuba Gooding Jr.?
No.
That's really different. That's American Crime Story.
Yeah, American Crime Story, The People versus OJ.
I knew there was an OJ with...
Yeah,
I,
no,
okay.
this is
year,
just
both
a,
in the same
yeah.
year.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah
it's like, what's the OJ? It's not even an anniversary.
It's like 22 years.
It's becoming a thing again, I guess.
But it's a documentary, and so there's lots and lots of footage from the era, which is really interesting, too, because it's sort of... It was the beginning of this sort of... there's always been tabloid journalism and stuff, but this was sort of the point... And someone says in the movie, it was like when this became such a huge story, that was when the media was like, okay, we give up. Like there's no more pretense of elite sort of like we're actually reporting news. We're just going to give the people what they want, and what they want is blood and guts and famous people. So
woo-hoo.
Yeah. So it's
Kardashians.
Well, and the Kardashians also play a big role in this because Robert Kardashian was one of Simpson's friends and a lawyer. So which is sort of interesting because like that's like a seed planted, and like there's a picture of young Kim on vacation with OJ and family. So
I watched about the first three episodes. Mm-hmm. I keep meaning to watch the last two.
Is it five? Yeah, it's five.
Yeah, it's five episodes, it's five an hour parts. And a half piece.
Yeah, we have it in the system.
It's really interesting in that, the first episode, he's just, it's almost like the first episode, you almost forget he's a horrific murderer or sociopath because it's like,
acquitted.
Story of a,
Yeah, that's right. Acquitted.
He is in jail now for armed robbery, though.
The glove did not fit.
Yeah.
That's, somebody who didn't care for sports and came of age in the 90s. I only knew him as Nordberg, and yeah. I was staying here and like, oh, he wasn't just a football player. He's one of the greatest football players who ever lived.
He was the football player.
Yeah.
It really is a fascinating movie. And so, I mean, and it plays pretty fair with like innocence and guilt of him, because he was acquitted. So in the eyes of the law, he is innocent. But, you know, but then also like the police have this horrible legacy and then also kind of botched their investigation too. So it was like, it was a perfect storm of horribleness in which two people lost their lives. And then that isn't swept under the rug, but became not even secondary, like tertiary to all the other stuff. So this movie's gotten like almost universal praise from everywhere. It's like 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes and all that stuff. One of the criticisms I did see, and then I also noticed in the film, there's like maybe four women among the interviewees in the movie. Like, because they don't interview OJ, but they interview like almost all his lawyers, childhood friends of his, associates, business people. They interview Marcia Clark. They interview a friend of the Simpson family, and then two female jurors. And I think that might be it.
Oh, there's a trans woman.
Pilot. That's right. You're right. So five. But so it's like the female voices are kind of diminished in a little bit, and it is a lot about spousal abuse, and obviously a woman was murdered. So there's kind of a weird disconnect there too. But I don't know. It really is amazing. It's a 3-week checkout, so you don't have to like rush through it in a week. You can take your time with it, which I did not because I didn't want it to end. Corrections. We have a lot of corrections today.
Gotta do our homework better.
Yeah, maybe I will start since I have the bulk of them here in front of me. So longtime listener Gary from Perth wrote in. We don't get a lot of fan mail, but we got one. He said, "Jeremy, I have no idea what your Bone Thugs and Harmony reference was about. And I have a feeling more than a few listeners feel the same way too." So
I was in that club.
So here it was. So because I have to explain the joke, it means it's not funny, so bad on me. The show posted on the last day of the month, August 31st. Bone Thugs and Harmony are known for a song where they go, "It's the first of the month." So I was saying it was the opposite day. So
I remember there being something about them, but I couldn't remember what it was.
It makes sense, but I got to explain it because apparently not everyone has the love for Bone Thugs and Harmony.
The greatest hits of Bone Thugs on their iPhone.
I had. My friends did.
Every time their videos came on, I changed the channel.
Yeah, well, I also hated them very much, but my friend Richard really liked them. And there was a song called Thug Love where like the rhythm was like a chick, poof, poof. I'm from Kentucky. So we can start a contest if you'd like, where listeners and podcasters alike can decipher what I'm talking about. If you'd like, you guys can decide on that if you'd like. The musical medley at the end of the show was all songs that we had mentioned on the fly. That was Crossroads by Bone Thugs and Harmony, Supermodel (parentheses You Better Work) by RuPaul, Like a Boss by The Lonely Island, and Beds Are Burning by Midnight Oil. We have all of that in our collection. Also, Clem Marie was right.
You know, is there ever like a fact where like you're wrong and then you're corrected, but your brain just like ignores you, you're corrected?
I remember
I watched I Love the whatever 80s or 90s or something, and it's like Midnight Oil's from Australia. That's weird. And like the lead singer became like a member of parliament down there and stuff.
Whoa.
Or he
was
ran
a koala.
That big bald dude. And I was like, wow, that's neat. And then my brain just like shut that off again. It's like they're back to South Africa.
Don't believe it.
Listen to Congo's gang. They're a South African band. They're great.
Also, Clem Marie mentioned Portland. She was talking about Portland, Maine, not Oregon. It's the lesser known Portland, if you will, I guess. So, yeah.
Fun library fact.
Information about Portland.
We send more books to Portland, Maine than we do to Portland, Tennessee.
Interesting.
Wow. So I always pull up the Portland, Tennessee one thinking, oh, it'll be the Tennessee. It's never the Tennessee one.
They must have a terrible library up there.
I guess. But we do share, so.
Well, does anyone have any other corrections?
I was going to mention the Midnight Oil thing, but you cut me off the pass.
All right. Well, good. Mm-hmm. So more information about why our library is better than the library in Portland, Maine, you can go to
www.library.nashville.org.
And our theme music is by
Anime.
Next month. Is what we're talking about next week. Is this month, rather. It's the first
Spanish
of the month.
Heritage.
Hey, you guys got to figure out what I'm talking about.
All right.
The rest of the world.
Contest, Jeremy Speaks, this week.
I'm not a professional broadcaster.
Hashtag smelly hand.
Yes.
No one's going to get that joke.
Longtime listeners will remember.
Oh, boy.
The episode.
Jeremy had something on his hand and he wouldn't stop sniffing it.
That's right. The podcast is just going to become about my neurosis. And so that's why next week we're talking about Hispanic Heritage Month. My wife is Hispanic. There. She is the cause of my neurosis. Wow. Does anybody have anything clever to say about fantasy?
It's fantastic.
It is.
You know, we're going on an epic quest to retrieve the sword of Pop-matic.
Yeah. See, I
must repel the dragon of laziness to.
Wow.
Keep going. What else you got?
The wizards of pop culture. Well.
Are you a dwarf because you work at the basement?
You're more of awesomeness.
Well, see, what I was going to do, I was going to.
It's kind of sad that we haven't found anything.
I almost started just reciting Prince lyrics from the song Seven, but then I thought, oh, maybe not everyone is putting it together that I'm talking about the set. And that has nothing to do with the show. Hmm. So, see, look, I stopped myself and I explained myself ahead of time.
You talked about Game of Thrones because that's why we're here, right?
Are any of us talking about Game of Thrones?
No.
Yeah.
No.
No.
That's okay by me.
Spoiler alert! Coming to you from Flea Bottom in the heart of King's Landing, it's the Pop-matic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Sir, spelled S-E-R, Jeremy, and joining me today are...
Mike the Jester.
I don't have anything clever, but Sarah.
Amanda.
Oh, excellent. So,
I should have said Hodor. I should be Hodor. Hodor.
You want to do it over?
The Muggle Sarah. Should we do it over?
Let's do it over. We're better this time.
Yeah.
We've thought of things.
Sorry, it doesn't have enough work.
Give us a chance.
All right. I will clap again. Coming to you from Flea Bottom in the heart of King's Landing, it's the Pop-matic Podcast, where you can rock out with your library card out. I'm Sir, spelled S-E-R, Jeremy with...
You just read that!
Our nine-hour episode continues.
Here we go. Coming to you from Flea Bottom in the heart of King's Landing, it's the Pop-matic Podcast, where you can rock out with your card out. Your library card out, even.
Take four.
Fudge. Only I didn't say fudge. All right.
Seven will watch you fall. We'll stand in the way of love. We will smoke them all. We're an intellect. And a savoir-faire. No one in the whole universe will ever compare. I am yours now, and you are mine, and together we'll love through all space and time, so don't cry. One day you'll separate us.